Morning in America. Michael Rubin is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. He's working on a book entitled Talking to the Enemy, The Perils and Promise of Engagement. His current book, available at BennettMornings.com, is Eternal Iran. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Thanks so much. And thanks so much. You've been talking to our troops again, right?
Indeed. At this point, pretty much four or five times a month as we speed up deployments to Afghanistan and retrain some of the folks which were supposed to go to Iraq.
And what do you talk to them about? About Afghanistan, about Iraq, about the Middle East, or what?
Generally, I tend to specialize in red teaming. So we have our missions. The Iraqis and Afghans have their missions. What I talk about is how the neighboring states, Iran, Pakistan, what their strategies are and how they interfere with us in the sandbox. And I also do lectures on how extremists use Islam to justify terrorism.
Okay, and the sandbox is where? Is what?
The sandbox would be the area of operations, Iraq or Afghanistan. It's not all too often in our policy debate. We talk about us and the Iraqis, for example. We don't talk about what the bad guys are doing and how what they are doing interferes with our mission. So
right.
That's what I go into.
Well, we're glad you're talking to the troops. How are they? Their morale pretty good?
Oh, the morale is great. Yeah. And look, it's difficult to go on so many deployments, but not only is their morale great, but when I talk to the spouses, for example, their morale is great as well because they understand what's being achieved.
Did I hear this right? Some of them actually listen to you on this show as well as in the classroom?
Indeed. It seems that down, especially in South Carolina and North Carolina, you have... You have regular listenership. They're up and they
right.
do their PT in the morning, and then around 6:30 rolls around, and they're listening to the radio.
Great. Well, hi, folks, and thanks so much for what you do. Thanks for what you do, Michael. This letter President Obama sent to Medvedev. Do you know the contents of the letter? Do you know what's in this letter?
I have not seen the letter, obviously. I just see what's been reported, but I have my suspicions based on President Obama and some of his advisors.
What are your suspicions that's what's in this letter?
Well, he's saying there is no quid pro quo, but basically what he's arguing is that if Russia reconsidered its positions on Iran, that we would be willing to reconsider our position on the new radar station, which we're constructing in the Czech Republic, and the missile base, which we are constructing in Poland. The problem with this is, number one, Russian reconsideration is reversible. And number two, what Obama, I don't think, realized is that bargaining over what's going on in the Czech Republic and Poland isn't just about reaching a deal with Iran. It sets some very dangerous precedents with regard to U.S. policy towards NATO and also how NATO is structured as an alliance of equals.
Let me ask, just make it simple for us, for me, and for maybe some of the listeners. What is the position that it wants, what is the position the U.S. wants Russia to reconsider on Iran? What is its position now? What would we like it to be, supposedly, in this letter?
Right now, Russia is helping Iran build a nuclear power station in Bushehr.
Okay.
What this letter allegedly says is that we want Russia to stop helping build Iran's nuclear program.
Okay. And to otherwise talk to them about slowing down.
Exactly. To be more helpful and to be on our side on the Iran-U.S. dispute, basically.
Okay. And as you said right away, you said they might say yes, but it's reversible. Or they might say yes and not do a daggone thing.
And they might say yes, and the Iranians have gotten up. Hashemi Rafsanjani, whom people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, one of Obama's advisors, has called a moderate, he's got up on February 27th and said, even if the Russians pull back, it's too late. We can start operating this on our own.
Right. Okay. So are we incorrect to believe the Russians have that kind of leverage, even if they wanted to help us out?
The Russians could be more helpful, certainly. But the time for them to be more helpful would have been in the past. You know, the basic problem with Obama, as I see it, is that there's a tendency for new administrations to come in and assume that the problems with the reason for the failures of diplomacy have more to do with their predecessors in the White House and less to do with their adversaries.
That's
a very dangerous attitude to take.
That's going to be, I take it, one of the themes of your book, I'm guessing.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, this will be a great book. When's it out, by the way?
Still have a way to go because it's a much more academic and historical take, in addition to looking to some of the trends which haven't been looked into. For example, How does a diplomatic process impact the way that intelligence flows within the U.S. government, impact what papers get to the president's desk? And to do that right, it takes a lot of research.
You don't do this book a year thing, do you?
No.
Yeah, it takes, what, five more years?
Hopefully not that. If any of my bosses at AEI are listening, okay, they flinch at that, but hopefully
we'll say,
within a year or so.
When I was chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities, Michael, we were working on a project, the Hittite Dictionary.
Right.
And I talked to these guys, and I said, how are we doing? They said, oh, we're moving right along. We're going to finish ahead of time. I said, what's the schedule? He said, 60 years.
Wow.
We may bring it in 52, that we were at the letter H or something. Anyway, it was academic schedule, you know, but we know you work faster.
Well, that's a good talking point if they always...
yeah, take that. Yeah.
I was talking to Bill Bennett about the Hittite Dictionary. That's actually something you might use, isn't it?
Indeed.
All right. Simple question again. Why wouldn't the Russians just say, sure, you know, this program is... we want you to stop building this program, so sure, we'll help the Iranians. Or, on the other hand, why would they care whether we build a missile defense system that's aimed to prevent attacks on Poland or Czechoslovakia, Czech Republic, from Iran? Or is the defense system there to protect against the Russians as well, and we don't want to say so?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, let's talk about realism and ideology.
Good.
This administration, Barack Obama campaigned on a return to realism, putting aside ideology and foreign policy. It's ironic that oftentimes, though, his foreign policy seems much more ideological because he doesn't understand the realism of our adversaries. What is Russia's goal? I mean, this is your fundamental question. Russia's goal is maximizing Russian power. And if you talk to any of the officials in Eastern Europe, or if you look at what happened in Georgia this past summer and so forth, it seems let's forget about Medvedev. The real power in Russia is still Vladimir Putin.
Right.
What Vladimir Putin wants is basically a return to the influence that the Soviet Union had. In this case, it would be more of an informal empire with the former states. And this is one of the reasons why he doesn't want the U.S. ratcheting up its presence, if you will. He doesn't want Poland and the Czech Republic formally integrated into NATO as full members. Now, technically they are, but if Obama agrees to remove these bases from Europe, from Poland and the Czech Republic, what it basically says are all these new states of NATO are basically strategic debt. They shouldn't receive the same level of protection as, say, a Belgium or an Italy or a Great Britain, and that is exactly the wrong message to be sending both to our allies and to Russia.
And protection from, I know I'm stuck on this point, but I still am. It's protection from everybody. I mean, it could be protection from Russia as well as Iran, couldn't
it? Well, the stated reason for these facilities is to protect against Iranian missiles. Now, a cynic could say, well, are the Iranians really going to launch missiles at
Poland.
Europe?
Yeah.
And in all likelihood, not. But since NATO was founded, there's been this principle that the North American states in NATO, Canada and the United States, and if you want to include Greenland, for example, as well, and the European sections of NATO are entitled to the same level
right.
of protection.
Right.
And since we have our missile shields and our radar stations in Canada, in Alaska, in the continental of the United States, by tradition, that goes all the way back to Harry S. Truman, including Republicans and Democrats, the Europeans should have the exact same level of protection. And what Obama is also sacrificing in almost this off-the-hip deal-making is a half-century, a 60-year concept that Europe that NATO should have one level of protection.
Yeah. Now, I see the point about second-class citizenship, and they don't want that. Then we shouldn't have second-class citizenship, second-class protection for Poland and the Czech Republic. But these places, these governments are properly apprehensive about this and probably a little ticked at us, right? It looks like we're selling them down.
Well, they are. And look, both in the Czech Republic and in Poland, there was some domestic opposition to going forward with these bases. However, the reason the governments wanted to do this, especially looking at what happened in Georgia this summer and looking at Russian moves towards the Crimea and the Ukraine and so forth, is they really want to cement themselves in as full members of the alliance. And in fact, when Poland was either balking a little bit or negotiating too hard, I believe it was Lithuania stepped in and said, "They don't want. If they don't want it, we're taking."
All right, but this again, back to the point, is as much fear of Russia as it is fear of Iran, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Now Medvedev kind of slammed the door on Obama, didn't he?
Maybe
I'm not characterizing that. What did he do?
I mean, Medvedev basically said, "Look, we'll be willing to talk about these bases in Eastern Europe now that you've opened the door to negotiations, but we don't haggle. This has nothing to do with Iran." And so basically, anyone could have seen this coming. And you go back, we were talking offline a little bit about the whole Reagan-Gorbachev summit history. Now, when Reagan would meet with Gorbachev, he would negotiate from a position of strength. And this is what happened in Reykjavik when a deal wasn't struck.
Right.
The fact of the matter is Reagan set the stage to negotiate. Reagan wanted peace, just like presumably George W. Bush wanted peace and like Obama wanted peace. But Reagan understood what coercion was about and how to have successful diplomacy. It seems that Obama is step-by-step making the same mistakes as Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, and I mean, there's kind of a hat-in-hand quality here, isn't there, toward Medvedev? Am I reading that right?
A bit. That's how I read it. And, you know, as I was going back through some of the book research, I was reading about Carter's campaign against Gerald Ford and about all the campaign promises, for example, to just withdraw from the Korean Peninsula back in the 1970s. I mean, this is... I was 3 or 4 years old at the time, so this was new to me. But it's kind of scary that Carter was using the same advisors, again, men like Brzezinski, which Obama is using now, and simply not understanding the importance of negotiating from a position of strength.
All right, can you stay with us another segment? Your schedule
sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Calls for Michael Rubin on this very volatile situation. Iran, Russia, Poland, Czech Republic. I mean, talk about flashpoints. It's Morning in America. Give us a call. You can talk to Michael Rubin, 866-680-6464, 866-680-6464. And I have an encouraging piece of news for you when you get back, and it'll be encouraging to Michael Rubin, too. Stay with us, folks.
It's Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
Chinese barnyard music. I don't know what that is. All right. We're back with Michael Rubin, resident scholar, American Enterprise Institute, talking about the Russians and Americans and Iranian bomb-making. We just looked it up, Michael. You're working on a book. You can tell your boss, Arthur Brooks, about your completion, and you'll look good because the Hittite Dictionary is scheduled for completion in 2045.
Oh, I can almost guarantee, Arthur, that I will be done by then.
Okay, that's almost guaranteed. Yeah, Seth looked up Gustav Gruckerbach and Harry Hoffner, University of Chicago. Yeah, they met with me in 1982, and they said, wonderful progress. We'll be done in less than 60 years.
Right.
Anyway, very encouraging. Okay, I want to go to calls for Michael Rubin. Let's go quickly to William in Dallas. Go ahead, William.
Yeah, Bill, thanks for having me on, and Michael, too. I think the emphasis of Michael's discussion was that he is concerned about influence of the Russians over their neighboring countries. I think the focus should be the more urgent and more terrorist issue of Iran. And I want to know what Michael knows about the following fact. As you know, the Israelis will never allow the Iranians to have a nuclear bomb, and they've already started maneuvers to go and completely eliminate that capability.
Okay, and thanks. The question is, will they do that, and what does that mean? What do you say, Michael?
Well, I'll answer this shortly. There's three different threat assessments with regard to Iran. The Europeans are worried about if Iran develops nuclear weapons capability, whether this would mean the end of the NPT. For the U.S., the problem with Iranian nuclear weapons is it's strategically untenable. For Israel, they fear it's an existential threat. However, I'm not convinced that they are going to be able to go in and do the job. Iran is 6 times the size of Great Britain. These sites are hardened. It would take, realistically, about 1,400 sorties. However, if Israel feels its back is against the wall, they will start the job, figuring that someone else may need to come in and finish it, and that would be a recipe for chaos.
Would that be us they would expect to come in and finish it?
That would be us, and frankly, it's in the interest of several of the other neighboring states to do this. And at this point, the Persian Gulf states, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, are getting extremely nervous about what Iran is doing. Iran, sort of like Saddam Hussein back in 1989 and 1990, started talking about Kuwait as a province of Iraq. Well, over the last month or so, as the Iranians have neared progress on their nuclear program, gotten it to the point of operation, they've started a great deal of rhetoric about how Bahrain is just the province.
Okay. Are the Russians nervous about Iranian development? They're not. They're helping them, right?
No, the Russians are helping them, and this may be something that, that eventually burns the Russians. But if I may, I think that the Russians believe themselves to be in a win-win situation. On one hand, if they can sell weaponry to Iran and if they can build its nuclear program, they win billions of dollars in contracts. If, on the other hand, Israel were to strike Iran or the United States were to strike Iran, the price of oil would skyrocket up again, and this would get pull Russia, which produces a lot of oil, out of its recession.
Okay, I see. I see their point. All right, Ken and Concha Hawken, quick question. We're running out of time, Ken.
Thank you, Bill. Michael, actually, the original question was, what are our NATO allies in response to the letter? And in response to your last answer, isn't Bahrain, we have a major naval base?
Yes, short answer, and I was just in Concha Hawken on Friday. Short answer is we do have a major naval base in Bahrain. That's where the 5th Fleet has its local headquarters. And with regard to the other NATO allies, look, in reality, there's more than one NATO. The Eastern Europeans are much more worried about Russia than the Western Europeans are.
Yeah, so the response of the Western Europeans is not much, is that right?
No, it's much more even-handed. The Eastern Europeans are looking to see whether we really do abandon allies.
Yeah, well, all right. This has been the case for a long time. So what should Barack Obama do now? If he made a mistake with this overture, what should he do now? The Washington Post had an interesting line. Let me read it to you quickly. It said, one thing the president should do is make it clear that deployment of a U.S. Patriot missile defense battery to Poland, promised by the Bush administration, will go ahead regardless of what is ultimately decided about the larger system.
I would certainly agree with that.
Okay. All right. Fine. All right. And then, was this a misstep by Barack Obama early on? Would you say? Can we say that at this point, or is it too soon to tell?
I believe it was a misstep. Barack Obama talks about rebooting relations with Russia. He doesn't understand that when it comes to Russia and when it comes to Iran, they don't operate on the U.S. political calendar. The world didn't start for them on January 20th, 2009.
Yeah. All right. Listen, Michael, thank you very much. Good luck with the book. We know you'll get it done on time. The current book is Eternal Iran. But again, I want to thank you, I think, as much as anything for the time you spend with our troops. It's really great. The reports we hear from people, we hear the other end, you know, people call us and say they've listened to your talks and lectures. It's really tremendous how you're serving them and serving our country.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Michael Rubin, you want to know foreign policy? Listen to this man. And aren't you all gratified that he's out there teaching American troops? We'll be back. We're going to get into the question of health care when we come back with Tevi Troy, who's a terrific guy, former Deputy Secretary of HHS, and he will tell us what to expect. Yeah, I know, cringe a little bit, but you need to hear it. You need to know what it's good for you, and we'll give you the upside if we can find one. It's morning. It's morning in America. You stay with us. Things will be fine. In the long run, things will be fine.